Hello everybody and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are here for another week of our Turning Towards Life project. I want to say welcome to everyone, welcome to you and me, Lizzie, but also really welcome to all of you who are listening, watching live on Facebook, listening to the podcast, seeing us on Instagram, all the different places that we are. And this is the 200th and somethingth week of a project, Lizzie, where you and I and many others around us, because we do this, are in an unfolding conversation, I think, about how we might stay in contact with our lives and how we might support one another in staying in contact with our lives. And as usual, we're going to start with a source to launch our conversation off. And thank you so much for bringing this wonderful, powerful source that you brought us this week, Lizzie.
Thanks, Justin. Yeah, I love what you're saying about maybe this is all about being in contact with our lives. And one of the things that I know enables me to do that is this spirit of this practice of inclusion, of including more and more of myself, of other people, of life, and learning how to open more. And so this poem that I found this week by John Wellwood, who's one of my favorite people, obviously I've never met him, but when he writes I feel like I would like to know him. And I guess through his poetry we do know him, which is such a beautiful thing about poetry, isn't it, that it's a view into the heart of someone if they wrote it. So this poem is called Vulnerable, and it's by John Wellwood, and it's from a book called Poems of Love and Awakening. And it goes like this. Vulnerable. Always be vulnerable to your pain, your fear, your loneliness, to your pleasure too, and your joy, to all that travels through you. Don't close the doors to these pilgrims from a far off land, but welcome them all. One, a wild, restless spirit, secretly longing to be tamed. Another, a lover on a long, sweet night who only wants to melt in your embrace. For this is how you grow. By including everything. Always, always be vulnerable to all that you are.
I'm about to read this to you, Lizzie, but I can't resist saying, oh my goodness, I had read this before, but hearing you read it now reminds me of something so important and so powerful about what happens when we include ourselves. So I'm feeling joyful and invited. And I wanted to say that before reading this, because maybe for all of you who are watching or listening, maybe you're in the middle of something, or who knows what you're up to whilst you're encountering this. And I want to make an invitation before I read this, just to ask you if you can to pause for a moment. And I'm going to read John Wellwood's words, which you will be able to find in the notes for the podcast and also on our lovely website, turningtowards.life. But right now I'll read them for you. Vulnerable. Always be vulnerable to your pain, your fear, your loneliness, to your pleasure too, and your joy, to all that travels through you. Don't close the doors to these pilgrims from a far off land, but welcome them all. One, a wild, restless spirit, secretly longing to be tamed. Another, a lover on a long, sweet night, who only wants to melt in your embrace. For this is how you grow. By including everything, always, always be vulnerable to all that you are.
Thanks, Justin. So as you were reading, I was receiving this, what feels like a kind of grand permission to be immersed in and keeping on listening and turning towards the things that come up in life. And I think when you were reading, I was thinking, oh my gosh, I can feel all the ways I've pushed things away to kind of get on or something. And this feels like an invitation and a permission and a normalizing of the way that it's so enriching to stop and think, well, what is this? And how can I work with this? Rather than I've just got to push on through, or I just got to ignore that, or suppress that somehow. So I'm feeling a big kind of sigh of relief in me of like, oh gosh, yeah, I can pay attention and not be afraid. I can wonder what's here and keep moving in the direction of that. And that's what's called for. So this vulnerability to ourselves seems like a way of saying how to be soft unto ourselves. Like when something arises in myself or another, can I be vulnerable to it? Which is a different kind of thing for me than just being vulnerable. So I don't know if you noticed, Justin, but the picture that I posted with this online was this really sweet little deer curled up in a ball. And for me, that's like a state of vulnerability of someone who's young and maybe a baby and doesn't have its own kind of systems yet to defend itself and protect itself. So it needs help from somewhere else, which isn't really the vulnerability that this is. It's like to be vulnerable to something is to be receptive to it. So maybe that deer is vulnerable to its protectors. So it's different than just the kind of, you know, the state of vulnerability of exposure and not knowing, and which of course is also here, but this feels like an invitation to being vulnerable to something, is to be able to turn towards whatever's arising with vulnerability and with openness and receptivity and trust that it is made of what's supposed to be here for our lives to be ones we can be in contact with. So like you were saying, maybe to be in contact with our lives is to be vulnerable to what is here, to be vulnerable to our pain, to be vulnerable to our joy, and let it kind of have us and trust that that's okay.
I don't know. I haven't looked, Lizzie, so I don't know what the linguistic roots of vulnerable are, really. But it strikes me that it has in it, as the end of it, and able. And I wonder if that is referring to a capacity rather than a state.
Mm.
You know, to be vulnerable in the sense of I'm at risk. That's one of the ways in which we use vulnerable, like I'm in danger, I'm vulnerable to being attacked, I'm vulnerable to falling over, I'm vulnerable.
Yeah.
But this other sense in which you're using it, which is a kind of openness to, it's a letting ourselves be affected, it's our capacity to be affected by what's here, to be changed by, to be reached by,
yeah,
something, and to stay open to it is a different angle on the same word that can too often to us can feel frightening. We want to not be vulnerable. We certainly want to not be vulnerable to what would put us in danger, what would harm us.
Yeah.
So this invitation at the end of John Wellwood's poem to always be vulnerable to all that you are is a whole turning round of that, because it's got the same, I suppose, what in listening to you, what I can feel is that what links both kinds of vulnerability is it's sort of tremulous, right? It's like, what will happen? I'm not in completely in charge here. I might really be affected by something.
Yeah,
it's got that in it. And then the invitation is to be vulnerable in that way to what's here. And what moved me so much in hearing you read this was this line, this pair of lines for This Is How You Grow by Including Everything. And when you talked about this project, this long Turning Towards Life conversation, Lizzie, earlier as being about inclusion, I got so excited to hear you say that because I'm in agreement with you, it's about inclusion, and because it feels to me so life-giving to realize that the work for us to do is that the work of our deepening and the work of our growth is a really important kind of inclusion, that we learn to stop pushing away, defending ourselves against, denying, avoiding parts of ourselves, what's here of ourselves, and that is also connected to a much bigger commitment to inclusion, which is, as we can do that for ourselves, we can do that with one another too. Because I think very often and John Millward doesn't go that this way, but I think very often that our difficulties including one another, the ways in which we defend ourselves against one another, and the ways in which we judge one another, and the ways and the prejudices that we bring to one another. I can't be with you because of the way you walk, or the way that you look, or the way you sound, or you know, whatever it is. They're all actually versions of the same thing, which is, as long as we're engaged, to the extent that we're engaged in all the ways of pushing away the pilgrims from a far off land that are within us, is the extent to which we also have difficulty welcoming when we're in relationship with one another. When I'm with you, of course, all kinds of parts of me are coming up, and very often what I'm doing in pushing you away is actually pushing away parts of me. So the work of including ourselves also has it's not just for our own growth in this beautiful way that John Millward talks about, it's also for our capacity to be in relationship with one another, to include one another, to dignify one another, to care for one another, to understand one another, starts in this. And it's striking me that a lot of the ways that our attempts to learn to be more inclusive with one another fail is because we don't do this part of it. So we go, I'm going to have to somehow fight with myself in order to include you. I'm going to have to follow some rule to be able to include you, Lizzie. Like every time I see you, I have to push something down or something like that. And that's so self-defeating, because all that's happening is I'm shifting an uninclusion of you into an uninclusion of me. I've got to sort of fight myself in order to include you, instead of going, what's the part of me that feels afraid when I'm with you? Mm-hmm. What's the part of me that feels ashamed when I'm with you, that has me act in the way I do? Could I make this move of welcoming them all and including everything and finding out how to include you that way? It would be such a different way from the way we often try and go about this.
Gosh, what's arising for me, Justin, when you say all of that, is that we were with some people yesterday, and their little boy, who's 4, has some really big experiences of frustration and really, 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 really shouts and cries and screams when basically we were outside and there was a little picnic rug and his apple juice spilled on it. And then to clear it up, we had to tip it off the thingy and then, you know, use kitchen roll or whatever to wipe it up. And he was really upset about his apple juice. And so then he was really, really cross with his mum, because I'm imagining in his world, when I include him, I'm imagining that he thought it was his mum's job for that, to make that not happen, or to clear it up in a certain way that he thought it should be cleared up, or, you know, something particular. And so he was really, really cross with his mum, and his mum was trying to calm him down and soothe him, but nothing was working. And this went on for 15 minutes, maybe at least. And then little boy's dad came and took him for a little walk, and they kind of resolved it. And he came back happily about half an hour later on his dad's shoulders, having gone for a walk around the place. And I feel like, in a way, this is what was needed for all the people encountering what was happening, so that we didn't all exile them or something. Because what I could tell is that what was happening in the system is that my body, my nervous system was more actually concerned for the mum. And, you know, as a mum with a young person in my care, myself at the moment, I could feel the nervous system of mum, and but also the nervous system of the child. And I could feel this way that it would be so easy to have judgment on it. It would be so easy to go, oh, there's something wrong with the parenting, or there's something wrong with that child. Or, you know, I could feel that there was this kind of cultural way that we all do that. And I've done that myself. And though yesterday I could just feel this capacity to be present to and to have compassion for and breathe and allow and stay right there and not turn away energetically or to be shaming or, but to go, oh, this is what's happening. And actually Vespa, who's two, my little one, was so sweet because she doesn't have all that interpretation yet. You know, so she said, Mummy, what's happening? And I said, oh, he's having lots of feelings. He goes, oh, do you think he wants some cucumber? You know, it was like a kind of really objective approach to what was happening, like sweet little kind of offerings that might make it a little bit better for him or something. And it turned out he didn't want any cucumber because he was right in the center of things. But in a way, Vespa was my example of this vulnerableness. She was completely vulnerable to what was happening with him. But it didn't mean that she was all over the shop or upset herself or anything. She was just present to it without interpretation of what was going on. But she could feel things. She was vulnerable to it. It was how she was asking questions. It was impacting her. But she stayed right present and she didn't move away and she didn't do anything other than a kind small offering of some cucumber. And I feel like that for me is a kind of model of vulnerability in this context, which is I'm here and I'm open and I can respond without too much interpretation. And it's okay to be you right now, according to me. And so then we're not adding a whole other layer of suffering on to what's happening, which is already quite difficult by our own social kind of alienation that we're all capable of bestowing on other people.
About the part that you said about judgment and about Vespa maybe not having those kind of judgments, she's just going, oh, I wonder what's here. But we adults very easily carry all kinds of judgment. And it seems to me that in the spirit of John Wellwood's poem, that the one move, and I'm speaking not about your judgment here, I'm speaking about all my judgments, right? It's like speaking that one move might be just reading what he says, to be vulnerable in a way to the pain and the fear of the loneliness of the judging parts of us. Because it's one thing not to have it, you know, to have the sort of simplicity of not having developed those parts yet. But for most of us, we do have all of that. And in a way, the judging parts of us have, not even in a way, the judging parts of us have good intention and they serve a purpose. You know, it might be a part that's trying to make sure that nobody gets hurt, or it might be a part that makes sure that our families and our culture keep together and don't fall apart. And it might be, and that the trouble is something like a part of us with strong judgments comes up and is trying to drive away the other parts of us that might be compassionate or open or whatever. And so then the bigger something that we are, the bigger self that we are, then has a role to play in properly including all of the parts. So there are ones that are sometimes being scattered, and there are ones that are coming forward very strongly. So it seems to me that one of the things to do that I learned to do sometimes, to go, welcome judging one, I can feel that you've got really, really strong judgments. There are really strong judgments here, and they're welcome in the sense that they've got really good intention behind them. And there are others here too. That's the inclusive move. And there's the one that, you know, the part of me that really, really cares about what's happening and really wants the other people to be okay. And there's the, and then beyond that, there's the something that we all are that is essentially welcoming, that is essentially curious and welcoming and loving. Sorry, I'm just feeling it's because I could feel how one way that I've tried to go in situations like that, Lizzie, is to try and is to try not to be vulnerable to the judging parts of me. Mm-hmm. Is to go, judging part, you're bad. You shouldn't be here because judgment in this situation is terrible. But you know, judgment, we really rely on judgment. The very same something that comes up in that circumstance that might be tricky relationally and might end up with someone else being treated in an unkind way. In another circumstance, that very, very same part of me is discerning and onto some things that are really important and would have me not ignore stuff in my life that needs paying attention to. So that's why I'm wondering about this move of can we gather all of us and let all of these, the wild restless spirits and the lover and a long sweet night and the pain and the fear and the loneliness, can we allow all of them to have a place and grow by inclusion rather than grow by domination and suppression?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really moving to hear you say that, Justin, and I feel like the bit that you said about the part of us or the self that holds all of those parts, that feels like the key question to me. Because when you were saying about, you know, the judgy part coming up and all the other parts that care and want the social fabric of things to remain coherent and all those things, what I noticed is that when I put myself back in that situation that I talked about, I'm sure all of that is there, but there's also a self there that knows the impact of the different parts of myself happening on other people. And I'm sure I can't know it all, but I've studied it a lot and I want to continue to look at my parts and which part has an impact on people that results in this kind of thing happening and whatever. And what I can see is that in that situation, there were some vulnerable people who I was vulnerable to. And the judgy part could have taken over easily. And I'm sure it does in lots of situations. It didn't this time, because I could feel it's easy to stand in the shoes and think, my goodness, this is difficult for me. But I think what really occurs to me when you're speaking is that if I am to have any kind of agency with my parts, I have to be able to hold them in front of me. And the me being with a big M, like the self that gets to see my judgy part, the self that gets to feel what it's like to be that, the self that gets to have some choice as to whether that's the part I employ right now or whether I could attend to it and ask it to step back, for example, so that I could be here in a more present way. But that there is an implicit something happening in what you're saying that means we're in relationship to all the parts of us that arise in all these situations we're in. And that's another way of saying that we could be vulnerable to our parts, because if I'm not vulnerable to my parts, I actually can't see them and work with them. It's like I have to look them square in the eye and say, hello, the part that judges people, what's your agenda? Like, what are you concerned about? What do you need? What do you want from me right now? What would it take for you to step back so I can attend to this in an appropriate way that would have somebody feel included rather than excluded? So it's not that the judgment part gets kind of pushed away, but it gets seen and held, and I become vulnerable to my judgment part. So there's a kind of a separating out of things that happens. In order to do that, the self has to be there to do the separating out and to look at and holding. And it feels like that's something that could very easily happen all the time. Like, I feel the possibility of doing what you're saying. I have that capacity. I have a sane self, you know, I have a self that would attend ordinarily to someone suffering or someone who was lost or someone who needed help, or, you know, a broad self that goes, oh, what's needed here? And of course, there's a thousand other things too. But that self seemed quite a trustworthy self to say whether the judgment part is appropriate right now. You know, that discernment that you talked about, that sometimes the judging self is a thing that stops you from getting run over or something. But sometimes it's the part of us that comes forward that makes somebody feel ashamed or excluded or something. And so that discernment seems to come from that implicit place that you're talking about, that holds these parts in front of us and goes, oh yes, that's my compassionate part, that's my judgment part, that's my ashamed part, that's my cynical part, that's my, you know, we can, in the naming of it, the very fact we can name them means that this self is here to be able to see them and to feel towards them and be vulnerable to them, so that we can be in relationship with them rather than them, those parts just having us and driving us and, you know, washing us around in a washing machine and us not knowing how come that just happened. So it feels like a really empowering invitation to encounter ourselves as a system of parts with a whole self that is also able, vulnerable, as you're saying. Maybe that ability is generated by or comes from this self that you're talking about.
I was particularly love what you're saying, Lizzie, and I was touched very much by the way that you talked about this bigger something that we are, which just could have lots of names. We're calling it self here, but that it's that of us which knows, which actually really knows how to take care of who and what needs taking care of. I think what we are first and foremost is a kind of care, actually, us humans. And you can see it in talking about Vesper, and, you know, who's a full person but a small person, so hasn't got all of these other sort of protective things so much going on. You can see that that's comes forward so easily, and that what I can hear and what you're saying is an invitation for us to trust that of us.
Yeah.
So that that of us that is able in this way, that is able to take care of, that is actually, I think, is the root of, we've both been talking about compassionate parts, but actually I think that this is this bigger something that is the root of all compassion, because compassion is always something, real compassion is actually something that has a lot of trust in it. It trusts our own ability to be with another and to be with ourselves and to respond appropriately. So when John Wellwood says, always be vulnerable, always be able in this way to your pain and your fear and your loneliness and your pleasure and your joy, what it's calling on is this kind of faithfulness.
Yeah.
That you're talking about, faithfulness that actually, alongside all of the frightened ones and all of the ones in pain and all the ones that are lonely and all the ones that are super excited and all the ones who want something and have to get it, and all the ones who want to control that are of us, that are in us.
Yeah.
Alongside that, there's something of us that's really, really deeply dependable,
yeah,
and really, really able. And maybe the whole point here is that when we forget that, and so some smaller part of ourselves sort of leads the show, is very often when we don't get to include others. And that this invitation that John Wellwood is making, that it's including, it's finding that of us which we can be faithful in, and that including everything is how we grow.
Yeah.
Seems so right to me. And then our growth and our ability to include isn't a matter of forcing and isn't a matter of correcting ourselves and isn't a matter of following the rules or any of these ways that we try to sort of force ourselves into something. It's actually a process of learning how to trustfully, vulnerably include what's already here, which we can do. That's the thing, is we can do it.
We can. And, you know, Justin, I'm also realizing the reality of my lived experiences of, like, borrowing someone else's self by being in conversation with them when myself isn't able to, my noble part, my saneness, isn't able to be in the conversation with my parts. Like, as in, something arises in me, it's really hard to be vulnerable to, because it kind of has me. To be in conversation with you, when I'm finding it difficult to be vulnerable to, or I'm just in a state of vulnerability where I don't know what to do, the way you then relate to the part of me that's here right now becomes a way that I can contact my self that can be in relationship to that part too. So I'm realizing that, and it's funny because we do always come back to this at some point in our conversations, that we matter to each other to be able to do this stuff. So that you're being present to me and my whatever's arising for me in a way that's not as embroiled in it and not as opinionated about what's going on, but that can see from a different place because you're in a different body than me and you care about me. Your noble, compassionate selfness that we're talking about can bring a different quality of relationship through so that I can have a different quality of relationship to the thing that's happening. So it's because I can feel the like demand on me to kind of, from myself, to have this self like ready and raring to go whenever I need it. But many times it's not, and I feel like blinded by my story or something really has me. And then I need someone else to be with me in it so that I can tether on to the selfness, receive it for myself, and then relate in a different way than I have been. So I'm realizing the crucialness in the way that we're talking of being in relationship with one another in these genuine and open ways, so that we can relate to things that arise in our lives in this vulnerable way. You really matter in that process to me. And that's what we need from each other. And as you said, we are caring beings at the core of things. And so it's also when we get put in that part, that constellation of being the person who brings a noble self to another human being, we feel like we have been met by life, because it's our inherent nature to be that for one another. So when I ask you for your help, the noble self comes forth. You know, it's like it's really clear. And so we can trust that when we're in relationship and we're serving one another in that particular way, that is the one that's going to come. I'm reminded of a conversation I had with some of the people who are doing our year-long program, Justin, and they're just beginning to do their work with people. And this was it. This was the conversation, which was, oh my gosh, how am I going to do it? What, you know, all the parts that come forward when you're beginning something. And this reassurance that as you sit in service, a self will come forward who's eminently noble, sane, and compassionate, because that's who we are, that we can trust that. And we can't necessarily trust it when we've got a parking ticket and or the bins didn't get taken. But we can trust it when someone's across from us who needs us to listen and who requires us to attend to them. Our nobility will be called forth. Like, I literally have no doubt in myself that that's true. That this noble, compassionate self is called upon very naturally by you and I looking one another in the eye and you having asked for my help. Of course that one comes forth. We can trust that. Like you said, it's eminently trustworthy.
I'm learning so much from this conversation, Lizzie. Well, I love this language that you brought in of the noble self. And that's really the heart of being with one another. You're reminding us that although John Wellwood's poem looks like it's about one person, it's also really about how we can be for one another. So thank you for that reminder, Lizzie.
Mm. This has been really beautiful, Justin. Thank you for being here. And I think what we've also done today has been vulnerable to this poem. And I think that's what we do each week, is that we be vulnerable to whatever's here and to each other as well. So thank you. And thank you, John Wellwood, for just speaking to the heart of things and leading us along. And we're going to be back, Justin, next week, next Sunday, with another source. And in the meanwhile, we wish you all a very, very, I don't know, what kind of week, an inclusive week. And thank you, Justin, as always, for being here with me.
With you. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.